In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, may peace and blessings be upon all of God's prophets, blessings of the likes of that which was bestowed upon Abraham, and may the blessings and peace of God be upon all of you. It's really wonderful to be here. I have been to this mosque before, but haven't actually been to this room. We have a lovely mosque in Ponsonby, which this reminds me of, because it's really the only mosque, I think, where in Auckland anyway, where we've had regular interfaith gatherings, and the presence of other people of other faiths and the earnestness with which we try and come together brings a special blessing to any place of worship that may not have been there otherwise. So it's great to be here and amongst you all. It's not that I really belong with my predecessors. I'm really only here because I learnt from David his example, and he has hinted that he came up to Auckland, I think it was 2009 initially, for an interfaith ecology project workshop. We wanted to regenerate the wetlands in Onehunga. Some of you may know where that is, just on the early part of the motorway on the way to the airport, Auckland Airport. And we held a workshop with our Christian friends, and Dave very quickly agreed to come up, and then for the Charter for Compassion as well, which was in later 2009, and again David showed that same responsiveness, that positivity and that energy, and so when he asked me to come down here, even though I perhaps didn't belong in this particular forum with the other guests, I wanted to certainly reciprocate and to learn that lesson that David has definitely taught me about the partnership that we have with each other in this small country, and assisting each other by crossing cities if we have to participate in blessed gatherings like this. I'm really grateful that I have gone last, because I think my predecessors do have I think fulfilled and done justice to this topic. And so I'm reassured that whatever I say, however it may be taken, will hopefully only be the sort of rantings on the top of the base that's already been established for further discussion later on this evening. I don't have the theological background of the rabbi, for example, and so my suggestions might come across as more of a practical or pragmatic nature rather than really couched in any deep philosophy or religious history. Given my limited time, I'll get started. And I guess my background, as David has said, is that we launched this charter in Auckland back in 2009. And perhaps just to give you a little bit of background, I do have a slight sense of frustration, and David obviously shares that somewhat, and has I'm very grateful that he's organised this renewal. A slight frustration that people like myself, who did launch the charter, who contributed towards launching the charter, haven't done more to activate it. And I think activate is an apt word, because it kind of has perhaps lapsed in a certain sense. And maybe reactivation is what's needed. The starting point for all projects in all of our respective religious communities should be universality and a common textual reference. And that textual reference is, of course, the Charter. Our works are, of course, affected and informed and may even be characterized by our faith background, but our articulation and overall approach must be universal. That is why we must move beyond serving our own communities exclusively, and there is much to learn from our Christian, from the Christian universal approach in the areas of philanthropy, charity, and volunteerism. And we've of course been given some beautiful examples by Nick and Daniel in that regard. As humans, we are created to learn from each other for the overall benefit of the human civilization, and not just from our own selves and or from our own community, but from those of other communities. So what are some of the specific areas that we may wish to target in activating the Charter? One area that I think we may wish to focus our efforts is in the area of personal conduct, interpersonal conduct perhaps. I think it's simply my humble view that there is a concerted effort needed to revive the concept and reality of properness in manners, behaviour, courtesy and compassion in the interpersonal sense. Now, there didn't seem to be very many people in Auckland that agreed with me, but I still believe that the... Actually, I probably should have put the sentence around the other way. I was going to say that, although I get the joke, but I was going to say that on the issue of the burqa just last week, there weren't that many people who agreed with me on this, but my assessment of it was that it was merely a behavioural response and a question of ethics and social space rather than, of course there's a lack of appreciation and awareness of the background to the spiritual dedication behind the burqa, and that of course is common to many, but I think what distinguished the response of those bus drivers perhaps from anyone else was simply their behavioural response and their reaction. And hopefully many of you agree with me when I say that a steady decline in properness and manners over even just recent decades leaves behaviour, dealings, appearance, all of these as a great area of potential cooperation and promotion and activating the charter in our society. And not just using religiosity per se or any other Old England or any other limited reference, but the universal approach and the universal reference of the charter. As far as restorative justice goes and the justice system goes, I had made a note here of the lack of universality of it, and I happen to work in the criminal justice system, or have done for the past 6 or so years, and then now in the disputes tribunal. The lack of universality does strike one when looking at some of the failures of the system itself. But the other main area of cooperation that I want to suggest is the care for children and for the elderly. And that was the only other area that I was going to suggest. I've put that before the love of neighbour, because I know that there has been a lot of talk and valid discussion about that, given the commonalities of love of God and love of neighbour amongst Christians and Muslims, theologically, and the expression of that through the common word. But it just seemed to me, again, through my own humble experience, that society itself, the rat race of today, isn't really conducive to neighbourly relations. And that's a wider problem, and that's to be accepted. But our priority needs to be directed towards the removal of serious harm that has been caused to children through neglect and abuse, and that's where the urgent need lies. And there are, of course, problems behind that, like drugs, alcohol, and gambling. But the compassion and love for children is itself a weapon in the war against the harmful effects of alcohol and drug abuse. And as I've seen in my time, many will quote-unquote do it for the kids. And if we can only reactivate that innate sense and passion for compassion in them, then we certainly have some hope for our children and for the appalling rates of child abuse in our country. But that's not obviously denying that neighbourly relations is, of course, something fundamentally important. It's just a situation where we put the urgent matters first, and it's an example of being informed by local and urgent needs using the principles of our faiths rather than being perhaps enslaved to literary interpretation. And nurturing our children towards excellence in personal conduct, which was of course the first area that I mentioned, suggested, including towards neighbours, will demonstrate to us the huge investment that it is. And the manifesting the love of the neighbour as a result of these teachings of in personal conduct to our children. And the Children's Charter for Compassion, which some of you may know about, is a separate document. It's appropriately articulated perhaps for a younger audience, and it's obviously a connected and vital initiative in that regard. Now, I now go to the some of the attitudes that I think may be appropriate in getting somewhere with some of these initiatives. And again, these have all been mentioned tonight, but I simply re-articulate them in my own humble words. We must not think from the perspectives of our own communities, but from the perspective of humanity. And of course, that's about having sincere concern for the other, the emphasis on the other. Every project that we engage in, every project that we initiate, whether it be to get our youth involved in something positive, whether it be to improve family relationships, whether it be to advocate for a good cause, it needs to be articulated universally. And so when I'm making these suggestions, I'm really making these suggestions to, obviously, firstly, my own faith community in which I'm active, but also to all of our communities. And our articulation needs to be grounded in the local needs of all in our neighbourhood, and it needs to use the charter as a universal and tangible reference point. And that is the key strength and uniqueness of the charter, in my view, is that it tests our ability to apply the principles of our faith using a document reference point that has no religious authority. It tests our loyalty to the good rather than to a religious group. There is no doubt that our faith is more than that, and I don't mean to offend anyone by implying that for a moment, but the motivation for many of us in doing what we do can at times, potentially, be as a result of our loyalty to a particular religious group to which we belong rather than to the goodness itself. And that is where the charter is unique. It does not mean ignoring or diluting our religion, but it does test our sincerity and dedication to good rather than to rather than our loyalty to perhaps a particular order, which I repeat is not to be denied or disrespected, but which must necessarily be subservient to our quest for good, which is ultimately a quest for God. So the charter, by using a potentially alternative reference point in helping those of faiths engage all of others in an increasingly secular society, is not intending to dilute religion, but to perhaps leave behind some of the baggage, rightly or wrongly, associated with religion in the interests of improving the overall human situation. And I think it's Karen's vision that the faiths represented here tonight, Abrahamic faiths and the other major faiths, play a leading role in that. And Karen has written some of the most positive literature to be read on our faiths, and she's far from diluting our faiths. She's honoured it in amazing ways in many of the books that she's written and the work that she's done. The tool that the charter provides in a truly universal reference document that takes us well beyond our faiths is what we need to remember. And I think that when I saw the bios of the other speakers tonight and their legal backgrounds, I was heartened, because I think it's up to legal people to extract and articulate and use some of these principles. And often that falls on the shoulders of a legal person. The use of these principles and the articulation of them in a much more universal context and outside our faiths. And I think that is the most important. That is the most important step to be taken at this point. And so, if we can articulate the importance of applying these faith principles outside the reference or context of Islam per se, or Christianity per se, or Judaism per se, although those are our means to God, but the ultimate end is, of course, God Himself. And it is He, God, not our religious order, that is our ultimate end or focus. And I'm not suggesting a dichotomy or an abandonment of religion. In fact, our trust in Auckland has been accused of that once by someone in our community, that we wanted to trade the Quran for the charter. But I assure you that is not the case. I'm simply trying to say that none of the faith groups have a exclusive monopolistic claim to compassion. It is a universal human value, and it forms part of the innate goodness of every human being. And as is reported in our prophetic tradition, all creatures are God's children, and the best of you are those who are best to their children, or to his children. And the prophet also said, peace be upon him, I am simply a granted mercy. And many of you may have heard the famous Quranic verse in which the prophet is quoted as being a mercy to mankind. So what are some of the personal spiritual motivations to doing some of these things? The Islamic position, very briefly, as far as our journey towards God is concerned, the journey to God is really only about the purification of one's soul, one's state with God, by all means possible, for nothing else will count at the journey's end. So the journey to God is to be in his presence, and in his presence only purity presents itself. And the relevant Quranic verse that I'll quote in that regard is, the day when neither one's wealth, whether they be red socks or something else, nor sons will avail, except he who will come to Allah with a sound heart. And another verse, be firm, steadfast, and balanced. Know that your actions alone will not be a cause of your entry into paradise, and that the most beloved actions to Allah are those that are done continuously and persistently, even if they be few. So the good deed is an affirmation of God, not of oneself, and not of one's religious order per se. Believing in one's good deeds as the end is ultimate failure. Ultimately, the journey to God is a continued striving to become truly conscious of God and truth, and such true consciousness is attained through a spiritual polishing of one's soul, one's heart. It's about being purified from all attachments as an end in order to be attached to God as the only end. And that is where I think that the charter is unique, in that it is an articulation. The charter is an articulation of the fundamental tool of compassion to achieving that end. And focusing on God as the ultimate end allows us to use all means possible to reaching him, whether they be articulated in the text of our faith or whether they be articulated in a different way. Some of the challenges that we have in the Muslim community, and in my humble experience in Auckland, seems to be common to other communities, is really just the lack of critical mass from within the community that's supportive of these initiatives. And where there's a lack of religious maturity in recognizing the value of any other text that might not be a text that's honored as a religious text per se. That compassion is universal, and that we may personally see in relative religious terms, but its existence lies outside of that, because mercy is for all and not just for those who are followers or believers. And so the charter is unique in that it provides a common reference for us all in articulation, in origin, and in orientation for people of any or no faith, and to give coherent and practical effect to compassion. And the charter is continuing in its momentum. The respect for Karen Armstrong, may God protect and preserve her, continues, along with the success of the charter itself, and the movement is fueling and retaining much of its momentum. The charter, in summary, in my view, tests our dedication and loyalty to compassion per se by challenging us to use it rather than our faiths necessarily as a reference point for compassion and goodness. And I think we should take up that challenge. And if anything, I think we will find that we will appreciate the uniqueness of our faith's particular articulation of these great virtues even more. So in the end, this is about challenging our communities to self-critique our motivations, and being able to put one's own religion aside, instead of being motivated perhaps by trying to proselytize or convert, which is, of course, said to be one of the major downfalls of interfaith. And it is a chance to affirm something rather than look for the lowest common denominator, which is another criticism of interfaith. So we have a huge task in our communities, and certainly we do in our community. But I think if we start, as has been said, if we start dropping those drops in the bucket while knowing that there are other drops from other communities coming into that same bucket, I think in the end we are calling people towards good. And that is the core that I think is Karen's vision. And I think that that is the proselytizing that we need not be ashamed of. And it is also about the creativity and the unity of voice and also the unity of action that's important. And one of the initiatives that's been inspired by this event has been a letter to Len Brown, who's the mayor of Auckland City, as you know, to make Auckland the first city of compassion in New Zealand. And we'll keep you updated on where that goes. But in some of the discussion that I think Dave might facilitate, one of the questions that I thought we could ask is, and I'll end on this, how do we better articulate principles that honour and activate the Charter while as much as possible honouring and not distracting ourselves in any way from the focus on our respective faiths? I'll repeat that, although that's a little bit. How do we better articulate principles that honour and activate the Charter while as much as possible honouring and not distracting ourselves in any way from the focus on our respective faiths? Thank you very much. Thank you.